Sometimes be careful who you align with. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, Barry. It's great to be back with you here in our respective studios. And yes, we're coming to you by the magic of Skype. So if sometimes things sound a little funky, it's because they're a little funky and we couldn't fix it. Sometimes that does happen. We have technical glitches, and this technology is imperfect. But let me tell you something. When we first started doing this by Skype, it's way more perfect than it used to be. It just depends on a number of things. So we're working on that, folks.
And again, it's the magic of the age. We try to do the best we can with the equipment we have, but, well, you know, Chuck, let's just be quite honest. The Institute isn't like a big money machine like the Clinton Foundation.
And no.
Neither one of us can go out and get six or seven figures to do a speech or have foreign governments come in and drop $20 million into our foundation for apparent reason, nothing about, you know, getting any special trade status or anything like that through the State Department. You know, we don't have any of that kind of stuff going on. So we have to live with what we can cobble together. So, you know, I'm just glad that we're here, that, you know, the Lord seemed fit to allow us to continue to move on here. That our equipment still, well, mostly works, and that, you know, we still have a great relationship with our host station there with WLRY and Mike O'Reilly, and that people still actually tune in. And every once in a while, I hear from some people who say, yeah, hey, I listen to your program. So it's nice. It keeps us going on. You know, Chuck, there's a lot of things that you know, we could be talking about. Of course, we're getting into summer now. After the Memorial Day holiday, and I don't know about your area, but most of the schools have, you know, emptied out for their summer break. Funny, you know, I remember this. Let me segue here for a second. We've had probably for the last, 4 to 6 years, legislation up at the State House that would basically require schools to not open until after Labor Day and then be done by Memorial Day. And that's kind of going back and forth, and people have argued, and, oh, you know, how the kids are going to learn if, you know, we shorten the school year, and what's that going to do to the schools, and how are they going to adjust? Yeah. Is it just me, Charles? But honestly, as I think about it, I'm not even sure that we have to have that legislation, because it seems like a lot of school districts, unless you get like a terrible, terrible, terrible winter where, you know, they have to cancel schools weeks at a time, even though they may start in like the week before Labor Day, nothing's happening. You know, it's more like get warmed up, get kids their lockers, get their books assigned, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then after Labor Day is actually when classes really get fired up and going. And then most schools have had graduation and finishing up and everything by, well, guess what? Memorial Day. I think the schools thought it was such a good idea, they just went ahead and started doing it.
Well, okay.
They have to do is report to the Department of Education that they've met the required amount of seat time for the kiddies, and they report all their scores. Well, I mean, that's really what it gets down to.
Some of that seat time's a joke. But up here, we got school starting in mid-August up here.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, and some of that in some districts, Chuck, is because of that wonderful educational opportunity called fall sports.
Well, yeah, don't we all know it? Yeah, but the fact is that I can remember when I was in high school, we didn't start till after Labor Day.
Yeah, we didn't either.
And we got out like the first week in June, almost always the first week in June.
Yeah, I think we had to go past Memorial Day, but honestly, that week or so after Memorial Day was nothing but just goofing off.
But football players were always ready to go because they knew the routine. The varsity team knew the routine because they'd been playing football since junior high football.
Well, and probably since before that, probably from Pee Wee and Biddy leagues.
Yeah, and they knew the routine. They knew that if you wanted to be on the team, you had to come to summer practice.
I remember, trust me, Chuck, I did that too. I remember two-a-days. They were
brutal.
They're brutal, yeah, especially
in July,
yeah. Now, I'm not an athlete, so I can't make that claim. The closest I ever got, I remember once in high school for a phys ed term, we had to run track, and it turned out I was very good at track, and I should have probably been on the team. I was good at the high jump, and I was good at the hurdles. So, and I could run relays. I needed some training. You do those 440s and you run as fast as you can for, for 110 yards. That doesn't sound like much, but let me tell you, when you're pushing it all the way for 110 yards, and you're out of condition, it's rough.
It hurts. Yeah, well, you know, I remember summer two-a-days for football. Anybody who's met me and knows me would automatically realize that I wasn't playing wide receiver or cornerback or strong safety or any of those like deep running positions.
You played the line, you know,
I was a pig. You know, I was a lineman. You know, I played on both sides of the ball, offensive and defensive line. And two-a-days were tough because on a big guy, you know, you don't mind going down and hitting the sled and, you know, doing tackling drill because that's kind of where you live. It's when you have to, like, start running and they start doing the wag the tail stuff, you know, where you start off at a trot and then the coaches call out and the guy at the rear of the pack has to run all the way to the front and that sets the new pace. And invariably, of course, they put the big heavy guys up front so that the fast guys are the ones coming up to reset the pace.
Yeah, right.
It's mind
brutal. Yeah, it's brutal.
But you know, you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, be out there with the dew all over you, busting up for a couple of hours doing conditioning, and then it'd be like, oh, we're gonna break and come back at like 10 or 10:30. Well, you know, you weren't going anywhere. You stayed there. So what do? You go in and hit the weight room, you know? Basically, it was like 6 straight hours of practice.
Yeah.
It's the thing, you know.
I can remember the football coach doing that.
Discipline's the thing.
I can remember the football coach doing a phys ed thing one term. And we had to lay out in the grass. This was during the spring. We had to lay out in the grass and do scissors. Brother, I can't... The chiggers from that was unbearable. You lay out there with nothing but a pair of gym shorts on doing scissors. First of all, your belly hurts, for those of us who were not in good shape. But that was basically the show. What they were looking for was people. This was in junior high school. So they were looking for people they could recruit to the team. They wanted to see who could handle the conditioning. Guess who wasn't one of those people? Yeah.
Well, I actually managed to handle the conditioning because I was on our football
team. Yeah, well, congratulations. I knew you'd played, and I assumed you were on the line because people are built for different things. My brother and I were laughing the other day because we both got sent to basketball camp, and neither one of us loved it. We didn't like it. My dad had been a college basketball player. Neither one of us, we were both like, I'd rather have a knitting needle in the eye than do this. Neither one of us could dribble. Neither one of us, you know, if you can't dribble in basketball, you're stuck playing defense and essentially standing there weaving. So neither one of us, really enjoyed it. And we didn't even have a pad with a backboard. We lived out in the country, and we had a gravel driveway, and if you've ever tried to dribble a ball on a gravel driveway, it doesn't work very well. So we didn't even have a concrete pad to play with. So, you know, even if we decided we wanted to, I suppose we could have talked my dad into pouring one.
No, not at all.
Yeah, but it doesn't work. So...
Well, you know, Chuck, like I said, it's summertime, so things kind of settle down. We're talking about two-a-days, but they really don't get started. Well, you got to finish up baseball and, you know, summer that and give the kiddies time to go on vacation for a little bit. So, yeah, probably around mid-June, late June, that's when football practice will get going full bore.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're giving the kids something to look forward to there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But that's, you know, usually, Chuck, now since this is an even-numbered year, and we have elections coming up in the fall, usually by the time you get past Memorial Day at the State House, things have pretty much wound down for the summer as everybody's clamoring to get back in their districts to go run for election or, you know, re-election to their seat or election to another office, which is usually the case. And, you know, we've got some now in the chamber that are running statewide and some that are running for the opposite chamber seat and some that are going or leaving and running back in the local districts for local offices. And we have some who are leaving and are just done. You know, they've decided they've had enough of it and they're going to go back and either retire or look for something else to do or go back to the businesses or, you know, what they used to do for a living before they got the crazy idea that they needed to go down to the state house and, you know, make changes. Which yes. I have to laugh sometimes because, you know, that sometimes they realize that the only changes that get made are in them.
Yeah.
And not for the better most of the times. But this year is an awfully odd year. Now, perhaps this is an offshoot of what everybody has been kind of saying is a change in the way things are done politically because of the aftermath of the 2016 elections and the Trump phenomena and the rise of the average American citizen, you know, wanting to cast, you know, have their voices heard. And I wish I could say that, but no, business as usual, just with a monkey wrench in it. If you've heard our program before, you've kind of gotten a feel or taste for what's going on at the old State House as we have a very interesting set of circumstances that were, well, made more interesting by a couple of events. The circumstance is that, well, this is an election year, and in Ohio, by law, all 99 seats in the Ohio House of Representatives are up for election every 2 years. And so that means all 99 House seats are up, and many of them have incumbents sitting in them. So really, a good number of those are really what are not in play, as we call it, because they're in a safe district and they've got popularity, and they'll probably win 60-70% of the vote. Or better. It, just like in primaries, when you got a candidate who like runs and gets an opponent and then they win 80% of the vote, well, that's kind of a signal that, you know, they're probably doing a fairly decent job or else the district's completely asleep and doesn't have any idea what they're doing down in Columbus. But be that as it may, you've got a lot of seats coming open. And, of course, in the Senate, you know, 33 members of the Senate, which is one-third the size of the House, but only half of those seats are open during every two-year cycle because they have a four-year term. And so this year, I believe it's the odd-numbered seats that are up this year. And they're up, and that means that there are 17 seats open in the state Senate. Now, that right there is enough to wonder, you know, okay, all right, really, they're going to have to do a whole lot of stuff because usually what happens in the second year, Chuck, and of course, maybe I'm being a little cynical about this, but you got to remember, folks, I've had 23 years of experience behind me with this statement. Usually what happens in the second year before they break for the summer is that they start passing legislation so that they can put it on their campaign literature to impress the folks back home that they're actually doing something for them. That's when you'll get the fixes to unemployment or welfare reform or tax breaks. You know, well, we don't do tax breaks in Ohio, really, and it's in the budget the previous year. But anyhow, things that sometimes they'll vote on a couple of what they call low-hanging fruit social issues, i.e. the ones that really don't change the game landscape that much, but they can go back and stick it on their literature and show their commitment to pro-life or pro-family or limited government or the Second Amendment. You know, what I call mailbox stuffer fodder. and I'm sorry, but, you know, and again, some of these issues I realize are important to certain people and certain groups, and they're very, very grateful and happy when these things pass. And, of course, there are also people, when these things pass, who are not so happy and not so grateful and are wondering why the legislature has lost their ever-loving mind and is passing this garbage legislation. Because, you know, there's more than one side to every story. But this year, since about, February or so or March, it's really kind of ground to a halt. Yes, we still have committees meeting. yes, there are still bills that are being debated and people coming in and groups coming down to lobby and having their legislative days, and you're having all their members come with their little name tags and walk the halls and pile into a member's office like a large group of lemmings, all excited and anxious to share with the legislator how important their issue is and to hear them mouth platitudes in response. And that's still going on. But the one thing that's really not going on the House side, at least, is convening of sessions and the passing of legislation, whether over to the other chamber or to finish up something that the other chamber has sent to them. Why? Well, it all started with the idea back before the primaries that the then current Speaker of the House, Cliff Rosenberger from Wilmington area, was term limited. See, now, Chuck, I know how you feel about term limits, but due to term limits, Speaker Rosenberger was in his fourth and final term in the House. And he really, there wasn't anything open because the Senate seat is an even numbered seat that he sits in. So he would have to wait 2 years out of office before he could run for the Senate seat if that was what he was going to do. All that's kind of moot now based on some of the other things that happened. So knowing Rosenberg was leaving, there has been some jockeying behind the scenes inside the House Republican majority on who is going to ascend the Speaker's dais and sit in the Lincoln chair, the State House and the House chambers, next session, starting in 2019. We have two-year terms in the Ohio legislature. They start in January of the odd-numbered year and go through the end of December of the even-numbered year. So it's a two-year single term. We're in the 132nd General Assembly right now, and we're in the second year of the term because the term will end or what we call adjourn sine die. And sine die is Latin, which means end of day or close of day. And what that really means is that all the business activity of that assembly comes to a halt because the assembly is then adjourned. Not recessed, adjourned. So they're gone.
Yeah, there is a difference. So, it's an important difference.
Yes, there's an important difference between a recess, which is a temporary break, and an adjournment, which is a final break. Or not a break, but a final dispersal of the convening of that body.
Go back to our school metaphor we talked about before. When you go out for a break over Christmas, it's a recess. When you leave in June, it's an adjournment.
That is correct. That is correct. Thank you. That's a good way of putting it in all terms, because legislative ease can sometimes get a little confusing. Does to me, and I've been there 23 plus years. So, anyhow, with that, I've seen a lot of these things go on. And so basically what we're having here is that with the changeover from the current speaker to a future speaker in the next assembly, you had two members of the House who were jockeying for that position. One of those is State Representative Ryan Smith, who's actually from my area, lives probably about 8 or 10 miles away from me here, and is my representative. He's also the chairman of the House Finance Committee and a de facto member of House leadership. He wants to be Speaker, and he's backed by Cliff Rosenberger, who was the Speaker for this session. The other candidate is Larry Householder from Glenford in Perry County, and if that name sounds vaguely familiar to some people, it's because Larry Householder has been the Ohio House Speaker in the past and wants to come back for another turn at the gavel. Householder was a speaker in the early 2000s before stepping out and going back, and I think he was county commissioner and some other things. But he got back in the legislature last session from his county, and he immediately started working toward becoming the Speaker of the House. Started, working folks, and they both recruited candidates, and it became a really ugly battle for a little bit because before the primaries, there were PACs associated most likely with Smith that were sending out nasty grams against all the Householder candidates, and then there were some PACs that were probably associated with Householder that were sending out nasty grams about the Smith candidates. And of course, they both recruited in some of these open seats where it's mainly a Republican seat, i.e., the percentage of votes are tilted heavily toward Republicans winning the seat.
Yeah, and we talked about those numbers post election. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's almost a lock guarantee that if your person wins the primary, that's going to be a vote for you in the next assembly for being speaker. Well, there were 21 of those seats, Chuck, like that they both went up for. And after the May 8th election, Larry Householder's candidates had won 20 of those 21 seats. Doesn't look too good for Representative Ryan Smith. However, a little thing happened on the way to the primary when, at the beginning of May, the House Speaker abruptly announced that he had been informed that he was being investigated by the FBI for particular practices and activities surrounding a junket to England and other environs and another trip to Hollywood, California, that the FBI has been looking at, that there might have possibly been some pay-to-play implications involved, that these trips were given to the House Speaker, and there were a couple of other members who were involved, that they've not actually been formally been told that they're under investigation, but he was. And so he announced he was under investigation, that he was hiring an attorney, and he was hiring David Axelrod. And Chuck, I think that name sounds familiar, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Yes.
Yeah. David Axelrod, who was a high-powered attorney in, I believe, the Bush administration. Oh, actually, no, I take that back. What am I thinking? Not the Bush administration. It was against the Bush administration. He was the chief strategist for Barack Obama.
Oh, gosh, that's right. Oh, okay.
For Obama's campaign. You and I both blanked out on that.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, okay. I guess I was thinking, who's the other attorney who worked for... His wife died in the 9/11 plane crash.
Oh, yeah.
Ted Olson.
Ted Olson, yeah.
Ted Olson was who I was thinking of. So sorry about those. No, but David Axelrod, who was Obama's chief strategist. So this is the attorney who was hired by Cliff Rosenberger as the Republican Speaker of the Ohio House of Representatives to help him as the FBI is investigating him. Now, first of all, to me, that kind of raises some questions. I'm just that way. It wasn't long before, like, the weekend was over with before you had a situation where it was becoming fairly obvious that the investigation had some legs. And so then the speaker, Cliff Rosenberger, announced that he was resigning his seat effective the end of May. Well, that's today, Chuck, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
31st.
Yep. But guess what? The speaker has been resigned now for almost 28 days, or no, 20, excuse me, 24 days. Why? Because right after he makes that announcement, it wasn't more than 24 hours before the second in command, Kirk Schuring, and others were encouraging Rosenberger to resign immediately because of the good of the institution of the House, and also because the reason why Rosenberger set a arbitrary timeline of, okay, if I'm going to resign because I'm bringing disgrace to the House, I think they can hold on to me for another 28 days until that's over with. No, it's because of the way the pay scale works at the Ohio House of Representatives. Members get paid in advance. They get their check for the month at the beginning of the month. And so if he didn't resign until the end of the month, he didn't have to pay any money back. But since he had to resign at the beginning of the month, then he had to pay the difference between the time that he had actually served and the time that he wouldn't be there for the rest of that month. He got paid, which when on his salary,
oh,
I think,
gosh,
that came out to be like he owed the House back and like $6,000 or $7,000, you know, because the speaker makes a nice chunk of change. So anyhow, that right there was kind of giving you, I think, a flavor and a tenor of,
yeah, the corruption is
of Rosenberger's character.
Yeah.
He was trying to maneuver it so he could keep the money, which honestly doesn't speak well to his character or possibly his claims of innocence or ignorance when it comes down to the potential of maybe receiving something for the purpose of either passing or killing legislation that was before his chamber, which that's what they're investigating, because it's all around this payday lending stuff, and there was a bill to basically reform payday lending like they did, you know, 10 years ago, and it didn't work because they found loopholes around it. But then it was running into a problem, and that the supposedly they have on tape somewhere through a wire worn by a lobbyist, my understanding, that Rosenberger was promising the payday lenders that the bill wouldn't go anywhere. As long as, you know, obviously they were still nice to him. Of course, did I mention to you that the trips that he took to England and to Hollywood were paid for by, well, ultimately the payday lending industry?
Which tells you something about the payday lending industry. They've got lots and lots and lots of extra money to throw around at legislators.
Well, when you charge 526% interest on on a short-term loan, Chuck, you'd have plenty of money to throw around, too.
And ladies and gentlemen, he's not exaggerating. It's 500, there are over 500% annual interest fees.
Right. When you look at it annually versus the 30-day fee that they charge, right, and you stretch that out to a year, yeah, their actual APR is over 500% interest. And that's the reason why back 10 years ago, the legislature tried to rein that in and cap the interest rate. So what did the industry do? They realized that they talked about short-term paycheck loans. So what they did was they flipped it around, and most of the industry shifted over to where they became mortgage lenders or title lenders.
Title loans, yeah.
Loans against your vehicle or mortgage loans against your house.
Yeah.
You know, they'd take that collateral and still give you the same loan at the same rates. But because the law didn't specify those type of loans,
right.
Oh, yeah, we can get away with that.
Yeah, so much for usury legislation.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the other problem is that usury usually means that there's somebody in power in office allowing it to happen.
Exactly.
Because, as we know, usury, you know, if you're coming from a biblical framework, Chuck, usury is prohibited.
Usury is absolutely prohibited. Now, a lot of Christians in the early days thought that meant that they weren't allowed to loan money at interest. Well, that's kind of a silly overreaction. I'm sorry, I took you off.
No, that's perfectly fine. So Rosenberger is now out, so that means that there's no Speaker of the House for the rest of this session. And because the Speaker pro tem, Kirk Schering, is the second in command. And, of course, there are provisions in that rules of the House of Representatives, which were voted on back in January of the previous year, that allow the Speaker pro tem, and pro tempore means for a short time. In other words, he fills in. It's just like with any business. Like, if the CEO is out, the second in command can fill in and keep the ship running until the CEO comes back to take over the operations of the organization. So, you know, that's what we're dealing with here is, okay, you've got the CEO is now gone. He's been basically, he's resigned from the company, so to speak. And the second command is sitting there like, okay, well, I got to run the day-to-day operations. And, well, the rules are saying that I can do this and this, but, oh, wait a minute. There's a problem here because the rules, we don't have any, like, assumed succession rule. So it isn't like, okay, if a member leaves, then everybody just moves up one, and then they pick somebody else to fill the low spot on the totem pole, which in the House Majority Caucus, there's six seats in leadership. The Speaker pro tempore, the House Majority Leader, the Assistant Majority Leader, the House Whip, and the Assistant Whip, okay? And so those are the six leadership roles, and it isn't just like, oh, if somebody leaves, then everybody shoves up one to fill in, and then we pick a new assistant whip, you know. And a whip just means someone who goes around and counts noses and talks to members on the floor to make sure they've got enough votes on a bill before they bring it up for a vote. You're whipping the vote.
Well, I think there's more to it than that. They are assigned to apply pressure to those who aren't with the agenda.
There can be that, yeah. So... and of course, before they even go to schedule a bill for the floor, there'll be what they call a whip call, which means that the whip and the assistant whip will go around to the members in their own caucus and find out if there are any issues and what they need to do in order to make certain that things, you know, go smoothly on the floor and everybody votes the way they are supposed to, i.e. the way they want it, so they can pass the bill.
Exactly.
So, anyhow, that doesn't happen because our rules don't apply, don't set for that. They just basically talk about the absence of this, in the absence of the speaker. Well, the speaker isn't absent. It isn't like he took off on a vacation or he had to go to a conference somewhere and he's absent from the day-to-day running of the House. He has abdicated his seat. He's now gone. You know, there is no speaker. And the rules can't be, and we're coming up on a point here. Now, of course, you've got these two guys who've been running for next year. And right now, Ryan Smith has the support of about 42 to 47 members of the caucus. We don't know for sure. And that gets interesting as well. But by rule and by tradition, they will not bring it to the floor for a vote of the full House on who the speaker is unless one of the candidates has a commitment of 50 votes, a majority of the chamber, which is also a big supermajority of the Republican caucus. Smith can't get the 50. Householder chose not to run to do this to fill in for Rosenberger till the end of the year. He's banking everything on after they come back of the November elections. Remember, he just won 20 open seats that he are going to be filled. 95% chance are going to be filled with his people come January. He's banking on becoming speaker and ascending and taking the gavel in January of 2019, and he doesn't want to throw that off any by, you know, presiding over the remnants of what may be a train wreck in the making from Cliff Rosenberger. If it becomes obvious that if the FBI digs further and if they happen to find that he's been doing this for a while, it will throw a taint on everything that's happened in this assembly. All the bills that have been passed before now will be brought into question. You know, so this could be a colossal, at least a PR nightmare for whoever is ascends to the speakership.
It's going to take a statesman. Essentially, the situation needs a statesman instead of a politician. Does. Yeah.
So Smith, okay, at the best has 47 votes because we know full well there are 18 members of the Ohio House Republican Caucus who have said that they will not vote for Smith as Speaker no matter what. And, of course, that's Larry Householder and many who are aligned with him. And so if you're at 47 and there's 65 members of the caucus, remember I said there were 66, but Rosenberger has resigned, usually you would fill his seat. When somebody leaves early, you would fill their seat, especially in an election year, with the winner of the primary election in their party, which that's a gentleman by the name of Shane Wilkin, who won that primary back in May, at the beginning of May. Wilkin can't be seated because they haven't had a session. You have to do it in a full session of the House. Without a speaker, we haven't had a full session of the House because other than the ones that are already scheduled, it's become clear and a number of attorneys have thrown in that the Speaker pro tem cannot call a session of the House. That is reserved to the Speaker alone. Oops, now we got a real problem.
Yes,
okay?
We do.
and it's getting compounded as the days go by, Chuck, because what happens in a legislative assembly is the first half of each year, like in January, the Speaker's office sends out the calendar for the first half, which is the first 6 months of the year, with all of the scheduled dates for the sessions of the House. Well, starting about Memorial Day weekend and going into the second, third week of June, all of the session dates are scheduled with the phrase, if needed, out to the side of them, which means that they're kind of technically on the calendar, but maybe not. Well, that's raised a legal question. If they are not firmly called session days and they're placeholders, can the Speaker pro tem of the House, Kirk Schuring, who's acting as an interim, not even as an interim speaker, he's just carrying out some of the duties of the speaker because there is no speaker, but can he turn those sessions live? can he basically say, we do need this session, and so it's a locked session? Or can he? That's a question. Nobody seems to know the full answer to that, and we might get the benefit of the doubt that they may go ahead and say, yeah, you know what, they were on the calendar. They had a place on the calendar, so therefore he has the ability to go ahead and, you know, live fire. Now, that's supposed to happen next week on the 6th. Now, it was supposed to have happened this week, but no sessions were scheduled. It was supposed to happen the week prior, and they tried, and this is what brought this whole up, that Speaker Pro Tem Schering called for a session on Tuesday that hadn't been on the calendar, and attorney both in the Democrat caucus and in Republican circles basically said, whoa, you can't do that. You can't set a session that hasn't already been placed on the calendar. You don't have the authority under our rules to do it. So they had to back off, and then they canceled all the sessions that week. We didn't have sessions the week before Memorial Day. We're not having any sessions the week of Memorial Day. Now, supposedly, because this big fight's going on, you've had the leading contender for this year's, you know, taking over the crown of Cliff Rosenberger, Ryan Smith, has come out and he did a press conference, which, honestly, Chuck, if we can find a copy of that, which I think Third Rail Politics has a copy of that video, we need to post that up, because I'm personally embarrassed as a fellow Gallia Countyan to see what I saw coming out of Ryan Smith, which was basically a lot of finger pointing, name calling, and blaming of people for why he can't get 50 votes. Chuck, between you and the pay on the walls, the reason why you can't get 50 votes is you've alienated people in your own caucus through this stuff and through a lot of the things that, yeah, I keep hearing the words arrogant and, you know, full of himself and, you know, haughty. I mean, even to the point where, and there was a big mistake where one of his supporters was having a fundraiser, I think last week, and they sent out invitations, and the special guests were a member from down in their area. And I'm not going to say who these members were, but then also in the invitation, it said Speaker of the House, Ryan Smith.
Oh, wow.
But this was while Ryan Smith still didn't have 50 votes and a session hadn't been called. A little presumptive, maybe? Well, yes, very presumptive. And I think it kind of squirreled a few people that, okay, wait a minute, you know. This isn't a foregone conclusion as much as Rosenberger and some of the lobbyists want you in. And then, of course, so Smith has this press conference, which honestly was an embarrassment. Then we turn around, and here just a couple of days ago, Chuck, I think on Tuesday, 11 members of the Smith voting bloc decided to hold their own press conference. And these are members who basically, and one of them, I'm standing there and I'm looking at him like, you just got appointed. And the reason why you got appointed was you promised you'd vote for Ryan Smith when Cliff Rosenberger appointed you. You know, so it's like you've got all of these political folks who are looking to, you know, they want to get good with the speaker, the supposed speaker, so maybe they can get some kind of perk like a committee chairmanship, et cetera, et cetera. And or they, you know, or the Smith machine pumped money and ran ads in their district, you know, like I told you, the two affiliated PACs that were sending out the mud, you know, that helped them to keep their seat against a primary challenger. So there they are out there on the State House lawn having this press conference about why we have to call the vote right now and get Ryan Smith in there. Well, during Smith's press conference, the press asked him repeatedly what his numbers were. Chuck, he wouldn't commit to a number. And if you listen carefully, you can tell that he basically inadvertently admitted he doesn't have 50 votes and he's not sure he's going to get there. What he's hoping to do is to force a call vote on it on the session and then whip and browbeat some of those 18 members into supporting him to carry him across.
Yeah.
Because, well, even though the entire House, all 98 members right now of the House, has to vote on the speaker, which means the 33 Democrats could end up creating a situation where they can help put the new speaker in place, because if you think about it, if they go with Smith, he's got easily over 50 votes, the majority of the House. But if they go with householders, well, not householder, because he's not even running, it's Andy Thompson from Marietta, who Smith claims is a householder plant, although Thompson says he frankly could care less about both of them because he's on his way out the door at the end of the year because he's going back home to run his business. And he was just going to do it in order so they could actually get some business done this session and get out of there. So if the Democrats went with the Thompson coterie, 33 and 18 is 51. They'd have it. You know? So the Democrat caucus right now, as pretty much as a whole, because I just found out that one Democrat has decided they're going to pledge to Ryan Smith because they're mad at the minority leader in the Senate and the Democrat caucus, and they're wanting to embarrass the minority leader. afraid the minority leader is going to take their entire caucus and give it over to another member. Well, even if they lose that one and all 32 go over with the Thompson folks, Andy Thompson becomes a new speaker. Another wrinkle, and I know maybe this is getting boring to people, now, but it's fascinating to watch the gyrations and the twisting and turning of these people trying to gain and hold power. Okay, so over the weekend, during Memorial Day weekend, there was a summit meeting held, and invited to that summit meeting, and it was called by the Speaker pro tem of the House, Kirk Schering, who wants to get this thing behind him and get moving. And again, Schering early on announced that he wasn't interested in filling in and being the speaker because he's running for the Senate in a seat that's easily, you know, he's going to easily take because it's a seat where he and the senator just bounce back and forth every 8 years, and they've done it like two or three times now. So it's basically, it's his by right of asking
yeah.
for it
yeah.
in his district, sadly enough. But he wasn't going to be speaker. So, you know, this is going along. He's frustrated. So now he's called a summit meeting, and he's asked the Ohio Republican Party chair, Jane Timken, from his district to come in and meet with these two folks, Ryan Smith and Larry Householder, and work out an idea how they can get this fixed. It's great. That meeting happened, I think, last Friday with one problem. Ryan Smith refused to go to the meeting. So it became a meeting between the Republican Party chair, Jane Timken, Larry Householder, and Kirk Schering. And they've come out with a couple of ideas. Obviously, they couldn't do anything that involved Smith because, well, he didn't want to participate. So here are their two ideas. Number one, they call a session and they vote on a rules change to allow the speaker pro tempore to take all of the powers of the speaker as an interim speaker, i.e. Kirk Schering becomes an interim speaker till the end of the year. He's now said he's willing to do this, even though he said he didn't want to do it in the first place, because honestly, he's like everybody else. He's sick of the embarrassment and the drama that's been going on around this. The second is that they call a vote and they just keep voting until somebody wins speaker. Now, Chuck, there's a rule already set up in the House for that. If no nominated candidate for speaker can receive a majority of votes after 10 ballots, on the 11th ballot, the candidate with the leading plurality of votes becomes the speaker. Okay? So we may have, and this session has been called for June the 6th, next Wednesday. We might see a speaker who will most definitely be interim until the end of the year, but we don't know who in the world it might be, because when you get down, you can, by House rules, in the middle of those 10 votes, you can have people drop their name out of nomination, and you can have people add their name into nomination by request in between the votes.
Oh, my.
Oh, yes, it's going to be. I'm telling you, next Wednesday, I'm just going to go up there and set, and just because everybody will be there trying to figure out who's going to get it, because it's become fairly obvious right now that Smith does not have 50 votes. And he wouldn't have had this big whiny press and his folks. Now, his 11 guys get out there to do this press conference. They're out there for 5 minutes talking about how they want to vote right now. But then when the press went to ask them questions about the number of votes that Smith actually has, they all turned and walked off. They would not take any questions from the press. What was the purpose of having a press conference? That's the whole idea of having a press conference, is to put an idea out there and then let the press ask questions so you can fill in and write your own story, basically. That's why you hold a press conference, so that you write the story for the press rather than them writing it for you, most likely. They didn't do that. They all took off and fled, basically, as some wags have put it. They all turned tail and ran to keep from answering any questions. That doesn't look like a strong base to me. It looks to me like, oh, we thought we'd do something out here to flush out some of the people on the other side and embarrass them a little bit, because we're willing to stand up and we're going to be the guys on the inside track with the guy when he wins. It didn't work out that way. So here we have it. So now we have a call, and it's basically a all the cards on the table call. Schering has announced that there will be session on the 6th, and they will either change the rule, and he will go ahead and stay as interim speaker until the end of the year, or whoever gets the most, either somebody gets a majority or there's a plurality win. But they will have a speaker after the 6th of June, and so therefore they can go ahead and there'll be no question about those days that they've got scheduled over the next couple of weeks, etc. So this is but all of this is based upon the fact that some people don't have balance in their life, Chuck.
No, I'm not.
That they think that this is the be-all and end-all of their life. You know, that Cliff Rosenberger thought it was okay for him to play and receive a bunch of perks and free travel and, you know, and rake in a bunch of money. And what he was doing was, well, if it's proven the fact that he did it, it was unethical and illegal. You know, there are now questions raised about Representative Smith and whether or not some of the votes he's taken in the legislature he should have recused himself from. Our friends over at Third Rail Politics are doing a series. They had one out today's Thursday, the end of May. They've got an article out there that's raising some questions. They've asked for a public records request from the House legal counsel, because they want to find out, should he have recused himself from these votes? If not, then he's violated rules, and that'll raise some questions as to whether or not that'll weaken his support as speaker. Now, again, remember, Larry Householder is not running for this, but I'm sure somebody will try to nominate him on the floor, you know, on Wednesday. But he said he wants to focus on supporting, getting business done, going out and supporting the candidates that won in the primary, and helping to, you know, keep the majority and become speaker next session. Which, honestly, if you look at it, if he's got 20-plus coming in and there's already 18, and I'd say all but maybe one or two of those members are going to be there next session, he's coming in with probably enough votes to sway enough people who are with the Smith team right now, but who will probably jump ship as fast as they can if things start going south. He will probably be speaker next session. And Householder's got another claim to that, is that fact that he'll have, well, surreptitiously, three terms in which to serve as speaker, whereas Ryan Smith is coming into his last term in office should he win in November. There's really not too much of a question of him. It's actually Republican, amazingly enough, in southeastern Ohio, and he wins pretty easily, and I'm not even sure I even know who his general election opponent is, if he has one. So fear of not coming back for another session, but it's only one session left for him. And so the question remains to these members: do you want to support and back someone who may or may not win and only be there for 2 years, and you're going to be there longer, knowing full well that another guy, Householder, if he doesn't win in January, he's going to continue on recruiting candidates until he wins the next cycle of them? You know, it boggles the mind of how many little Machiavellian games are being played right now. But that's really, honestly, that's been the story. And it's gotten, it's raised to national news level that Ohio is so dysfunctional, at least the Ohio, and of course the Democrats are smiling because it's all the Ohio Republicans are so dysfunctional that they can't even come up with a speaker. And the other question some of the members of the 18 are raising, it isn't because they love Larry Householder, or it isn't because they necessarily love Andy Thompson. They're saying, and I know one of them, Representative Nina Vitale, we've talked about on this program before, Nina's basically saying he doesn't want to vote for anybody in leadership who's had any affiliation with the Rosenberger scandals, because they don't know how deep they're going to go, and they don't know if, okay, well, let's say we put Ryan Smith in as speaker, and then 2 weeks later the FBI informs him he's under investigation. What do we do then?
Yeah. Because
these are some of the things they have to deal with.
That puts the Ohio Republican Party in a very precarious position if that happens. Because I remember
yes it does.
Early on there was scuttlebutt that was exactly what was going to happen. Now, scuttlebutt is one thing and actual fact is another. There's all kinds of scuttlebutt out there saying all kinds of stuff that's wrong. All we have to do is look at the news media reporting every time somebody says something, Donald Trump once ran over my dog. Well, it turns out that Donald Trump wasn't anywhere near the dog, but it's something to make Trump look bad. It just depends, don't kid yourself, that places like the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the Dayton Daily Worker and all that, the media cabal wouldn't love to report on something, whether true or not. Get that innuendo out there. A, it sells papers, and B, it serves the agenda. I mean, that's the bottom line on this kind of stuff. So, mm-hmm. Well, it needs to go away.
Yeah. And, well, speaking of papers, I'm glad you said about selling papers. Because I believe it was just yesterday that the Columbus Dispatch came out with an editorial endorsing Ryan Smith to be the next speaker.
Oh, my gosh. You're kidding.
Little presumptuous, don't you think? I am not kidding you.
No, first of all.
I wish I were, because I think it's just, I think it's embarrassing for the Dispatch. And of course, that's the mainstream media for you. They want to have somebody in there, maybe because they think that there is going to be more scandal and it'll sell more papers. Or maybe it's because they believe that he's going to be more of a middle of the road or even liberal speaker, and so that'll be good for writing articles and selling papers. Or I don't know what it's all about, but yeah, I mean, it just came out the other day that here they were basically saying that they're writing an editorial saying that Smith is the best choice. Only one real choice in the Ohio House Speaker mess. That was the editorial. Of course, written anonymously from the editorial board of the Dispatch, but posted yesterday on the 30th. You can go to the Dispatch's website and look it up. Basically, instead of saying that, yeah, we think it's a great idea that, we just change the rules and let the Speaker pro tem carry out the functions fully until the end of the year and get past this. No, they like chaos. I get that. I get that. So,
yeah, this move by the Dispatch sort of looks to me like it's a little Machiavellian in itself. Yeah, elect him, elect him, mm-hmm. elect him, elect him. So that we can crucify him if there's problems. I mean, looks to me like the bottom line. And what do you
see,
do?
And the Dispatch is making, I think they're making a calculated error. I'm reading this this editorial, and I think they think that if this vote to fill the remaining term of Cliff Rosenberger is actually the vote on who's going to be speaker next session.
Yeah.
Nothing is further from the truth.
Exactly.
Nothing is further from. First of all, they grumble and complain about Larry Householder, who, as speaker last cycle, he was kind of an ogre. Okay, people didn't like him. There were questions. He was under investigation by the FBI back when he was speaker. But nothing ever came of it. There was just some things that some people said, and the FBI took a look at it and told people, yeah, we're looking at it. But they found nothing.
I think he had to write a check.
And, of course, that was brought up. You live in that district, Chuck, or around that district where you go to church. People were getting those mailers and asking you what was going on about it.
Yes. Householder had to write a check for a refund check to somebody for somebody's campaign contribution or something. It was really ended up being essentially a nothing burger. FBI got involved. Yeah. His opponent.
It was found to have no merit.
Yeah, his opponent, a fellow named Black, was going around door to door and talking about how Larry Householder had been investigated by the FBI. Yeah, well, a lot of people have been investigated by the FBI, including anybody who's ever gotten a top secret clearance at the or has a high security clearance at the federal government. You get investigated by the FBI. It doesn't mean you're a crook. It means they're just looking at your background. Some of this is silly.
And that's really it. Now, the Rosenberger thing took a different twist because you could have just said that about Rosenberger, too. They were just looking at your background. No, last week, right before Memorial Day weekend, the FBI, or this was actually last Wednesday morning, I was at the State House, and everybody said, have you read the Dayton Daily News this morning? I'm like, no, what? So I got sent a link by a friend of mine that the FBI had raided Cliff Rosenberger's home in Wilmington and a storage unit that was in his name, and taking away lots and lots of things as evidence. So there's a little bit more than just investigating and questioning and figuring out somebody's background. They're on to something, because in order to get a search warrant, you actually have to have probable cause.
Well, yeah.
So it's looking very clearly like Rosenberger is probably going to get indicted. And then the question arises legitimately, who around Rosenberger? And it just so happens that Ryan Smith was his roommate in this multi-million-dollar condo apartment that was basically provided by a big money Republican donor who then has written monstrous sized checks, all legal, but monstrous sized checks to Ryan Smith and his candidates. Didn't help them win, they all lost. But now the question is, does the taint? That's what's got a few of the members upset and concerned. And of course, the dispatch out here saying that Smith is, I don't quote, well-regarded for policy expertise and ethical character. Gilding the lily much?
Yeah, really.
There are a number of questions. I mean, policy expertise, okay, yeah, fine, great. He's a good policy guy. Ethical character? Okay, from what we can see so far, maybe. But there are enough lingering, nagging questions that may bring that into question. Or into doubt. But here, the dispatch is basically acting like this vote coming up next week is really a vote on who's going to be the next full speaker in January. And that's not true because, again, the seats and the numbers change and the support bases change come November 8th.
Yeah, exactly.
When the election takes
exactly.
Place.
A lot of...
When Larry Householder, when probably a very large majority of Larry Householder's 20 seats are won by his candidates.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you look at that, plus the ones who are coming back who don't like Smith, being speaker, whether the dispatch likes it or not, but now they're out there with editorial basically, trying to browbeat members. So just let me tell you, vast majority of members are not reading the dispatch anymore. They think it's a piece of garbage.
Yeah.
I agree with them. But I think they're going to influence and get Smith in there. And for some reason, beat up on Householder. And that's fine. That's their editorial decision to make. That's their bed. Let them lie.
Yep.
But I think they're making a calculated policy error by thinking that if Smith wins speaker for this interim period right now, he can hold on to it in January, which I don't think is possible.
Yeah. Well, guess what? That brings us to the end. Yes, we have talked a lot about local politics, and if we bored you, we're sorry, but it's important stuff to understand. Are there machinations that go on in the legislature? Oh, don't kid yourself. And it's just as bad when the Democrats are in as when the Republicans are in. The players are just different. That's all. And can it be made better? Yes. Elect better people. That being said, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policy.